The MadTech Podcast Special, focusing on the most important topics in AdTech and MarTech.
Hello and welcome to this ExchangeWire MadTech Podcast. I am delighted to be joined today by three members of the ExchangeWire C-Suite for a very special edition of the podcast. First off, COO Lindsay Rountree. Lindsay, welcome.
Hi.
And next, CSO Kieran O'Kane. Kieran, welcome back.
Hello.
And finally, all the way from Australia, Rachel Smith, our CEO. Rachel, welcome back to the pod.
Hello. Thank
she
you
never
very much.
Feckin' leaves it, John. I never get on to this pod anymore because of her.
It's my fault. I'm scheduling everything. Anyway, you're all very welcome. Delighted to be joined by all of you. So we are here because January has been a very exciting month for ExchangeWire with the launch of Industry Review 2024, our State of the AdTech Nation report featuring eight pillars that the era-defining year 2024 are going to be built on. We launched in Soho. We had a drinks reception to launch the print product last week and to introduce the world to Industry Review. It's been really great to see how the industry's picked up on it so far. So we're going to be talking about our pillars and our early perceptions of how the industry is taking our report. Kieran, Lindsay, you were at the reception last week. Did you enjoy the event? How did you feel it went?
I had a great time. It was really good to see so many people out. You never know with January if people are going to want to come out or not because it's dark, it's cold, people are doing dry January and don't want to socialise as much. But I mean, the turnout was fantastic and everyone was in really high spirits and we seemed to get a lot of really good feedback and a really good reception to the product, which I'm delighted about.
Yeah, I think, you know, conversation was flowing. Like you say, it was really great on a fairly cold January evening to have such a great turnout, a really packed event. Kieran, did you enjoy it?
John, I don't like to blow my own trumpet, but I will.
But you do.
Industry Review is one of the finest publications ever in ad tech. It's a beautiful piece of work, and I'm very proud of what we put together. And I love the fact that it's at the beginning of the year, and I think the people who were there were excited by the year ahead, and they were loving the stuff that we've done in Industry Review, so I thought it was a great night.
Me too. Our own trumpets have been well and truly blown now, so that's about the hour.
We need sound effects.
We've got you.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to get a soundboard for all the podcasts. I'm going to add my own sort of like sound effects.
I can't wait.
It's just reminding me of the year of the Vuvuzela or whatever it was called. Vuvuzela. They were bad times. God. That's it, Vuvuzela. Anyone that was in Cannes that year with Kieran will know precisely what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about.
And if you're the guy who threw me off the boat, I still remember you.
It was mortifying, everyone. It was mortifying.
Oh, I could well imagine. Anyway, 3 minutes in, we've already taken a massive turn here, guys. So I'm going to introduce the first of our pillars that we are actually here to discuss. Rachel, retail media is, you know, one of our eight pillars of the year. It's been talked about as, you know, eye-watering margins across the industry. And yeah, one that we really wanted to focus on that we see is incredibly important. Well, how did you feel about the coverage in Industry Review? What were your key takeaways from it?
Yeah, so one of the things that I really enjoyed about this production of Industry Review, because we have released an Industry Review in previous years, but I'd say this one has been our best yet, layered over the top with a bit more sophistication than previous years, because we have drafted a MadTech sketch for every one of the pillars, which I think has been hugely useful in trying to sort of map out ExchangeWire's perspective on each of these topics. But I think it's provided a really good grounding and basis from which others can sort of engage in a bit of a debate with us about what direction they think, you know, various challenges or opportunities might be heading off underneath these pillar topics. And so the retail media chapter, and specifically the sketch associated with it, I thought was a great way of illustrating where the opportunity is in retail media at the moment and how various professionals across the industry are seeing it shake out and unfold. So what I thought was great about the content and Industry Review around retail media was Kieran's sketch very clearly identified the way that we see the monetization opportunities for retail media. So the sort of off-site targeting piece, the non-endemic advertising piece, and then the endemic advertising piece. And what was really interesting is in the contributions that we got from professionals across the industry that wanted to say something about Industry Review, they were able to extrapolate in a lot more detail about how they see those opportunities unfolding unfolding, those monetization opportunities unfolding. So there was a great quote from Peter Banasik from ClearCode, focusing on how actually the advertising opportunity for retailers is massive in the retail media ecosystem, and that that shouldn't be underestimated. And I think that's really interesting, because obviously we've talked about the retail media opportunity from a few years back being very clearly illustrated by some of these big retailers that have got interesting retail media networks. But he goes on to explain in a bit more detail about how the retailers are in a particular position when it comes to expanding their businesses. They've probably done everything they can with margins and around their products, but they've actually got this perfect opportunity to almost become the media owner in a retail media network and a retail media network environment. So I found that really interesting point. That was then picked up by our agency contributors, who said, in fact, those very words, you know, I'm reading through it thinking, this kind of puts the retailer in a bit of a media owner position. And that's exactly what our agency contributors highlighted, was that actually retailers are now able to operate the retail business that they would ordinarily operate, and then operate this kind of media business where they can run really sophisticated advertising businesses off the back of their retail site. And then that gives advertisers more sophisticated opportunities to reach particular audiences. And then the final point that I thought that chapter really underscored was that there is a growing sophistication in terms of measurement tools within the retail media ecosystem, and specifically within retail media networks, that's being underpinned by these monetization opportunities, right? So first party data, you know, for years we've been talking about how important first party data is for everybody across the ecosystem, not just brands, but retail media networks are really showing that, reflecting that back to us, I think, in very clear form. That here's an example of retailers who very often got some really interesting first-party data, brands who are looking to buy advertising space on those retailer sites and are looking for particular audiences to reach particular audiences and are wanting to overlay that with their own data. And then the retailer, you know, sort of sitting in that position of media owner, perfectly demonstrating how you know, fantastically well you can improve the monetization of your inventory if you've got sophisticated data segments. And then that measurement and attribution piece sits across the top of it. And our agency contributors talked about how they're experimenting with more sophisticated tools that are becoming available that you can layer over the retail media network. And actually, it just made me feel like that, you know, this part of the ecosystem is really coming alive with opportunity. And, you know, the tech solutions, together with how experienced players in the industry are trying to add a layer of sophistication to their marketing and advertising, is kind of coinciding at the same time. And it's creating a really interesting looking ecosystem.
Yeah, really, like, you know, it's a really rich area, and one that the discussion, like you say, there was a nice line between the sketch, Peter Peter from ClearCode's contribution, and then the other agency contributions we had. Lindsay, did you have any thoughts on the retail side?
I think just echoing a lot of what Rachel said, I feel like 2022 and 2023 were very much the explosion of retail media and a brand new trying to test it, understand it, experiment with it, and can really kind of get to grips with it. And 2024 is a chance for it to become really sophisticated. And that is echoed, as Rachel said, by the amount of conversation around measurement and people wanting to really kind of make it work as hard as it needs to for them. Now they understand it, they've tested and learned it, they can take it to the next level. I think that there was a comment from Colleen Nair from Group M in Singapore, who sort of said that there'll now be a conscious shift of uncoupling of retailer data from retailer inventory using the likes of clean rooms and SSPs, and retailers will feel more comfortable. It's always been a bone of contention for retailers not wanting to give their data away where they haven't got to, but actually with the explosion of retail media, there's an opportunity here for them to do so in a safe, anonymous, private, secure way. And we'll see a lot more of that from retailers kind of really kind of get to grips with it. We've seen a lot of the big ones kind of really, really embrace it. And we'll start to see a lot more different types of, you know, retailers, kind of non-endemic brands investing in retail media as well. I think it's going to be a really exciting time for that, for not just retailers, a bit like, you know, we've been trying to get non-endemic brands investing in gaming for years, not really getting there. But I think with retail, we'll see a lot more. We'll see the benefits of entering into the retail media space.
Yeah. Any final thoughts on that one, Kieran?
Not really. I think that both Lindsay and Rachel covered it well. What I would say is, what I think will happen is that those retail media networks will become closed sort of walled gardens. They're not even ad networks because they're closed gardens with omni-channel capabilities. And what really is be interesting will be like the signal-rich programmatic pool that will come out of retail commerce media this year. And I think that kind of bleeds into a lot of the other stuff we're talking about, like curation. I think you're going to see agency push for scale, and that's where we're going to see, I think, it's an exciting space. There's definitely a lot of money there. But it's more a case of like a product of the age, right? Deprecation of third-party cookies and a new first-party signal that an intent signal that buyers want.
Yeah, there's, you know, it's like you say, it's a big area. There's going to be a lot going on this year.
Huge area. Huge.
Huge. Yes, right. I'm going to move us on. I'm going to stick with you first on this one, Kieran. Post-cookie technology, huge for 2024. as we enter the cookie-less era, finally, the deprecation has begun. Kieran, obviously, post-cookie technology was going to be big for us. But yeah, we've got an awful lot of content on this. It was an area people were very, very interested in. How did you feel about that?
I'm not surprised. Look, I've kind of earmarked all my pages now to get to the pages quickly instead of flicking through it like some sort of half-wit. So it's good.
Amazing admin skills, Kieran.
Yeah, I'll keep it brief because I think the commentary is speaks for itself. It's fantastic commentary from Matthew, from Anonymized, Johnny Whitehead from Sky Rise, Sonal from Quantcast, Philip, who I seen this morning at Farringdon, from Adform. So they give some good sort of overview, which is worth diving into in the actual in this review. But I kind of separate it into five areas, right? IDEs, clean room, data stack, contextual and SDA, selling defined audiences, and measurement layer. I think you're going to see a lot of companies sort of lean into this. We're already seeing some interesting stuff in the clean room space. Habu got bought by LiveRamp, which is weirdly two sections come together. That's the IDs and clean rooms sort of merging there. So you're seeing a lot of activity in this space. And obviously, like, the biggest story of the year is going to be, well, one of the biggest stories of the year is going to be the sandbox rollout and deprecation of third-party cookies. And I feel this is the opportunity for the best and brightest in ad tech to really, really fess up and build sort of future proof solutions. And that was some of the contributors are actually doing that, which is fantastic. So I'm pretty excited about this. I mean, it's a sort of, it's less a sketch, more in four quadrants. And so, like, you know, those four quadrants I feel make up that space pretty well. And I think we're going to see more and more innovation around it. It's probably the most exciting category in the industry review this year.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's, again, a massive area. One of the quotes I loved from Industry Review was from Charlie Johnson from Digital Element. Rejoice because the digital sky is not falling. As a matter of fact, there's not even a cloud in sight. That is, an incredibly positive take on it, but a testament to the amount of innovation in the area that we're going to see in the post-cookie landscape. Rachel, how did you feel about this one?
Yeah, similarly, I think to Kieran, I felt like the commentary really speaks for itself. So I recommend everybody, reading it, downloading the document and reading it. I think the thing that I'm finding really interesting for the time being, rather than a prediction of what the world is going to look like in another 12 months when it comes to adopting post-cookie deprecation approaches, is the more immediate stuff. So this testing of privacy sandbox rollout at the moment is really fascinating. We've got a webcast coming up on, Lindsay, remind me the date. That's really put both of us on the spot. February 13th. Kieran knows. There we go. Phew, you see, your admin skills are just so on point. Yeah, exactly. Well, nor did I. On February the 13th, where we're going to be discussing some work that the IAB Tech Lab in New York are doing on testing the phased rollout of Privacy Sandbox and what that's actually looking like in practice. And they're going to be talking through each of the various stages and what impact they're having on publishers in particular. And that's the sort of stuff I'm really interested in. I want to see what it's going to look like from a practical point of view. There's obviously the long game, which is is, you know, what does the entire industry look like? I'm very much of Charlie's perspective, which is that it's not a disaster and there's huge opportunity. And so I just think, you know, the conversations that are happening from now onwards are going to be super interesting, and let's get some practical, you know, sort of experience under our belts and see what this is actually going to look like for parts of various corners of the industry.
Yeah. Lindsay, thoughts on that one finally?
I mean, yeah, I think it's there's so, as Kieran pointed out, there's so much content in this chapter, understandably, because it is the biggest thing that 2024 has to offer in terms of, you know, the future of ad tech. I don't want to be negative, but it's my natural go-to. But is that, I mean, I'll call out something that Niall Moody from Nano Interactive said. You know, he cautioned we have to be careful because the changes in targeting, and they are significant changes in the opportunities available to us to effective targeting, could mean that we go down a more black box route. And, you know, the example of Google's Performance Max is a great example of that. And we need to be careful we don't just kind of go for those sort of obvious types of tools because we're told that they will bring us everything we need. And
They're the replacement.
Yeah, we don't need to see all this stuff. What are you talking about? Like, we need to balance control with what is actually available to us, without trying to replace the cookie, but also without going too much into the black box route of things as well. I also want to highlight something that the brilliant Isabel Bass wrote from Starcom about, yes, for targeting, there's lots of opportunities available. We're still lacking on the measurement front. The loss of the third-party cookie doesn't just affect targeting, it massively affects measurement and changes the game for measurement.
Rob Webster mentions that LinkedIn all the time as well, that, you know, you can have all the contextual in the world, but if you can't measure it, what's the point? Like, performance is a, you know, a measurement game. So that's exactly an area people have to lean into.
Yeah, there's still some work to be done there. A big collective push required to ensure that actually, while the targeting has come a really, really long way, that we are actually able to measure the new targeting efforts. So I think that's a really interesting point that needs to be hammered home.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's one of the reasons why the sort of IAB Tech Lab testing results will be really interesting, right?
Definitely.
Because that's actually getting into the detail of what this means on a transactional level.
Excellent. Well, yeah, watch this space for more on the post-cookie landscape as it develops this year. Next up, our next pillar for the year is curation, one that we've been banging the drum about a bit, Kieran. It's, you know, it's a passion of yours as well. Rachel, how did you think, what did you feel when you read the curation chapter?
I felt glad to see a little bit more detail behind some of the things that we've been talking about, as you said, John, over the last sort of 12 to 18 months. Curation was definitely one of the key sort of emerging trends that I mentioned pretty much at every ATS that we hosted, the three ATSs that we hosted in 2023. And, you know, some of the things I was talking about with respect to curation, it not necessarily being new, but a more sophisticated opportunity for brands to reach and agencies to reach audiences that are getting harder to reach in an environment where cookie targeting is being deprecated and people are still gathering their first-party data armory, if you like, still putting that together. It felt really good to dive into a bit more, to see a bit more detail here behind how some, you know, tech providers are actually piecing together usable platforms for people to try to understand the value of curation and to apply it to their marketing and advertising activities. So James Lever from Multilocal gave a really good rundown of what their platform enables and what that actually offers to brands and advertisers, but also to the sell side. So, you know, there's an advantage to both the buy and sell side. And I think we got to see the MadTech sketch come alive to really see exactly how, both sides of the value advertising value chain can be using this to, point to and optimize towards very specific outcomes. So it's got a sustainability angle, curation platforms, as well as, you know, any other kind of particular metric that you might be looking to optimize towards, such as DE&I. And I think that you can really see it come to life in this chapter together, again, with the MadTech sketch. And I think it's something that people will feel that they can, you know, that's quite logical, and it'll be something that people will find really easy to relate to. Interestingly, you know, one of our other contributors in this chapter, Vince New from Skeleton Key, who's ex-agency based out in APAC, has said that, you know, some people will see this, though, potentially as another intermediary and an addition to the complexity of the advertising space. So I found that quite an interesting perspective because, of course, the point to curation is try to simplify, try to aggregate supply, try to make this smoother, more seamless, try to reduce the hops. But he's, you know, Vince is someone that always tells it how he sees it. And, you know, a bit like Lindsay, he always likes to, you know, provide a moderating voice in the conversation. And I think his point here is curation platforms might think that's what they're doing, but this is potentially how agencies and brands will see it. I think Kieran will have a, you know, a comeback on that.
Yeah. Lindsay, your thoughts on that first, and then I'll get Kieran to finish off on that.
Yeah, I think that curation is obviously such a fascinating topic, and we published a podcast on it recently, delving into it. And I think that there's still going to be a lot of confusion from people around what curation means. And as Rachel said, Vince's point, you know, I think rings true with me as well. A lot of people kind of don't quite get what it means and where it fits. It's actually very simple, but we need to make sure we don't overcomplicate it, because the whole point of it is to streamline a lot of stuff, make things more efficient. It can help to solve a lot of challenges in our industry. It can cover a lot of bases. We just need to make sure that we, you know, and we as Exchange will have responsibility here as well to ensure that we are not overcomplicating it, because it could actually bring great dividends for the industry.
Yeah. Kieran, thoughts?
Yeah. Lindsay's right. Don't overcomplicate it. You know, it's basically just aggregation of PMPs, scale across SSPs, and a deal ID into a DSP, which activates, right? It's more complex in the sense that you need capability. But I'm still reminded of a fantastic quote by Ari Paparo, who formerly CEO of Beeswax, and you know, he's been on many of our stuff over the years. Let 1,000 ad networks bloom, and I feel this is we're going to see a new wave of brilliant ad networks, not like the sort of 1.0, but a load of really interesting solutions around signals that will allow agencies to buy curated signal, curated inventory, and sort of point solutions. And there's nothing wrong with it. Anybody who's speaking out against it is generally coming from the buy side, who will talk about open marketplace. But that is difficult to do now at scale because of deprecation third-party cookies, because the actual function of the underlying mechanics of DSP, SSP syncing will completely collapse, because it's all about cookie matching, right? So there's a whole shift in the programmatic activation layer, right? The mechanics of how it works. So I don't know, a question of whether we should, it's a question of, you know, it should be done, right? It should be top of mind for everybody. And I think people are kind of in the mainstream and are kind of not really seeing this opportunity. I've been seeing it for the last sort of 12 months, more and more deals are getting done this way. And Multilocal are a great company and a product of this new innovation, right? So there'll be more of them. And, you know, there's plenty that Lindsay's worked with on the podcast, Audigen, who did a big sort of hub with us last year on curation. So, yeah, it's the big top of the year. And it's not just display, it's across everything. So our friends at Lima, who are in APAC, they're doing out of home. So it's TV, it's out of home, it's email, it's huge. That's all I have to say, really.
Excellent. Lovely summary. Yeah, from, you know, as James Lever said in the piece today, digital advertising needs a shot in the arm and curation is the ideal prescription. Boom. Lovely. Excellent. So next pillar for us is TV. We tried to outline in our own thoughts that the big question this year is, what is TV? The industry really needs to define it amid this fragmentation. Kieran, what were your thoughts on the future of TV pillar?
So, I mean, I get sort of annoyed about just the continuous bleeding of CTV and all the rest of it, right? And, you know, trying to graph over a sort of mechanic that worked in display or open web display onto TV, which has a finite amount of content, right? I think that the story of TV is mess, right? You have three buckets of inventory, I think, anyway. You still have a big chunk of linear, which is decreasing very, very, you know, it's still decreasing, but it's still significant. And then you have programmatic, right? So okay, you have your Plutos and you've got like some of these free TVs and you might have Samsung and LG, but like it's still a small pool of inventory and really ages are looking to access the ITVs of the world and Channel 4 is the world and Netflix and Disney. And that's the last sort of bucket of inventory, which is basically walled garden, right? That's the way in Netflix, right? There's a rumor going around that Netflix is trying to buy an SSP to build its own stack, right? So that'll be a walled garden. So I think that we need to start thinking about how we manage and activate across this disparate sort of ecosystem. And like I think I'm sort of big and bullish on sort of meta layers that sit above all that or signals that kind of help you navigate that and the measurement. I just think there needs to be a dose of reality really around the TV space, because I think we've kind of, maybe CTV is clearly big in the US, but this idea that it's going to become a thing in the rest of the world is a bit silly, because we have giant broadcasters across all these markets, whether in Europe, whether in Latin, whether in the Middle East, and they'll wall that off because they'll have trading deals with all the agencies, the big holdcos and some of the big indies, and they want to access that inventory, but they want to access it in a programmatic, data-driven way, right? Not necessarily DSP to SSP to inventory source, more probably DSP pushed into an ad server or SSP pushed into an ad server. And I think that's, this sort of blends lovely into the last topic, which is curation. You're going to see a lot of curated TV deals, and we've been seeing more of that. So I think like this idea that we have to kind of get rid of this idea that we're going to go to this like open RTB enabled TV space. I think that's sort of a US focus. It just doesn't work once you leave the borders of the US.
Fair enough. Lindsay, what did you think about the future of TV pillar?
I think that Chloe Gilman from Net Exchange, who wrote positively about the impact that OpenRTB 2.6 will have on the future standardization, and the standardization in TV is important, and talks about, you know, the attempts, you know, the benefits of 2.6 to create more streamlined, more seamless, less duplicated ad podding. So the way that we can actually kind of bunch ads together within an ad break will completely change and allow streaming platforms to look a bit more like linear TV. That I thought was interesting. It ties in with the comment that Bill Fisher made as well from Insider Intelligence around the impact of TikTok having on how we consume TV nowadays. And actually, TikTok has taken, the algorithm of TikTok has taken away our ability to choose or our need to choose. It just shows us what it thinks we want to see. And we've all become quite overwhelmed with logging on to Netflix, logging on to Disney and going, what the hell do I watch now? And yes, there are recommendation engines as part of that, but it's not enough, because you still find yourself scrolling through a million things and you've wasted half an hour trying to find something. And what he talks about is that actually the likes of TikTok could actually pave the way for it as a benefit for fast channels to actually create more curated channels with just a few select things that we might be able to choose between and go, yes, I want to watch that, rather than have a choice of over a million things to choose. And he rightly points out, does that sound familiar? Yes, it sounds very much like linear TV, like things used to be. So there's like, there's,
it's
a,
come
there's
full a, circle.
It has come full circle. I think we've reached the peak of what we can achieve as consumers when it comes to TV consumption, and the benefits of OpenRTB 2.6 helping us kind of consume advertising the way that we know and like in linear TV, and also, you know, the rise of TikTok making fast channels become a viable option for us in terms of how we consume content. It's linear TV 2.0.
I would add one point to this, and it's around advertising, right? So I remember about 3-4 years ago, the CEO of Netflix basically said there would never be any advertising on Netflix, right? And then Brian Weiser, who I respect, and he's a great, you know, we always have him on the pod, he's brilliant. He talked about, like, you know, people are not seeing enough ads. But if you look at the strategies of all the streamers, right? Let's forget about the CTV nonsense. Just like call them streamers, because that's what they are, right? So it's all ad-driven, right? It's Disney's got an ad strategy. Netflix have a massive ad strategy. They just signed WWE as a sort of long-term sort of partner, and they're going to live stream WWE Raw, which is a Monday night wrestling thing. So like, they're clearly going for, that would be probably mostly an ad tier demographic, because they'll probably say, well, I want to watch Raw, but I don't want to watch the rest of it, but I'll pay for the lowest tier, right? Like, there is calculated strategy around advertising. And it's funny, I think that your point, Lindsay, about broadcasting coming full circle, it's the ad business is coming back. Like, if you stay long enough, the buses just keep coming around, like, you know.
This is it. And everything looks the same, right? And I think that that is also, to your point, Ciaran, about the CTV or data-driven TV marketplace looking specific to the country or region or environment that you're in. It's because it's very often owned and controlled by broadcasters of traditional linear TV. That is absolutely the case here in Australia. And I just had a fantastic call with Jordan King from Channel 9 here in Australia, who reminded me that one of the reasons that they can do some of the exciting things that they're doing, which is looking for a sort of cross-platform measurement tool that's going to help anyone buying programmatic TV, regardless of who they're buying it from, they can do that sort of thing in a marketplace like Australia, because very much like the UK, it is completely dominated by three or four massive broadcasters that own all the audience and own all the, you know, outside of the streaming first broadcasters. So your Netflixes and your Amazon Primes and then your local incumbents here in Australia, Stan, Binge, all the other ones, they own, you know, all of the audience, and they are massive businesses. And so, and they are absolutely doing to their businesses exactly what has just been described by Lindsay and underscored by Ciaran, which is just trying to find other ways to package up content, to get it in front of people in the way they want to consume that content. And, you know, I think that is what the TV industry marketplace, the advertising marketplace in digital TV, will look like according to how each individual country and region is run by the most powerful broadcasters in that region. Also, and the likes of Netflix and Amazon just have to get in there and play with everybody else.
Also, they'll be part of a wider audiovisual plan, right? I'm sort of leaning into what Rachel and Lindsay are saying, is that within that plan, it doesn't matter what country, you could have TikTok. You could have, I mean, it's reimagining, you know, because like it's still...
Well, and you also might have audio as well, because as I was reminded again chatting with Jordan, some of the broadcasters own massive radio stations, right? And so they'll be looking to convert that traditional listening audience to a digital audience. So, you know, the plans could start to become quite sophisticated and multi-layered.
Yeah, and remember that, like, it's still brand building for the most part, right? It's still going to be the go-to for brand building, upper funnel stuff. But that upper funnel budget will start seeping into the streamers and YouTube and TikTok. Like, I could see a situation where plans just can reflect that, like, that broad sort of consumption habits people, because we're not all just going to TV. And like, as Lindsay said, people are sitting on TikTok all fucking day, excuse my language, but like, they're just flicking through the, you know, whatever the algorithm, and they could spend hours on this thing. So as a planner, you can't ignore that. Like, you know what I mean? It's still upper funnel stuff. Like, so I just think we're going to have sort of a reset this year. I think you're going to have traditional planning and digital planning sort of merging, which we've had, you know, many top tier agency people talking about that on our panels throughout the year, about this sort of coming together of traditional and digital, and that will reflect the whatever jurisdiction you're in. So, like, I think that planning piece is interesting.
Yeah.
We've spoken too long now.
But, you know, I'm realizing that we probably could have dedicated a podcast to each pillar. We are, you know, this is we're going in deep here, which is great. But I am going to move us on to attention. Another, you know, massive pillar. They're all massive. Ciaran, thoughts on attention?
Look, I'm a big attention bull. I think that, you know, as we move away from sort of last click and vanity metrics, attention just becomes more attractive in terms of engagement. It's interesting how it's been used. I think, like, there's a good healthy category around that. You've got your Lumens, you've got your Adelaides, you got Playground XYZ, you've got what's the other one in Australia? I've forgotten.
Playground XYZ.
Amplified intelligence, thank you. So you've got a healthy sort of area, and then you've got IES and DV piled into it as well, because they see the opportunity. So, you know, there's huge value around it. I think one of the things that will happen in attention this year, and I've kind of like highlighted it, I think it needs to kind of, especially on the signal piece and the activation piece at the DSP level or the activation level, you need to kind of be able to move that back to an outcome. So you'll see more and more of outcome-based stuff around attention this year, which is really good for the category, because I think it's the way forward for particularly publishers, premium publishers who are trying to, you know, monetize the value of their audiences and the attention that's spent on the engagement on their sites, which is huge. And the last click attribution model, like, it's just rewarding bottom of the funnel stuff and kind of like taking away the value from mid upper funnel stuff, which is where the publishers are operating. So I think attention is going to be a key area for the industry to lean into.
Excellent. Rachel, what did you
think? I'm very excited about it.
Rachel, what did you think on that one?
I mean, attention, yes. I mean, again, I thought it was a well-sketched out, you know, few pieces of content and contribution from everybody. Attention, I just think was, you know, so well covered in a lot of exchange wire activity throughout 2023. I just want to see what happens next.
Yeah,
that's. I can't add any more value to what Ciaran said there. I just want to see what happens next.
Fair enough. Lindsay, your thoughts on attention?
I think attention will underpin a lot of stuff. I'm just being very generic here with the word stuff, but it'll underpin a lot of stuff this year. it'll be very, very important. But, you know, Ciaran says he's very brilliant. He's an attention bull. I think I am as well. But I also know that for many people, they see it as another lever that can be pulled and not this panacea that's going to solve everything when it comes to measurement and targeting. But I do think that, you know, there's some great examples of how it's worked really well. Anthony Crocker gives a really good example of how they've used it for the Telegraph. And, you know, the phrase advertising to engage, not enrage, and making sure that they are working with the advertisers to use advertising to share the screen between content and advertiser responsibly. I think that's a really nice way of putting it, because that's where it needs to be. And Liam Brennan from Responsible Marketing Agency talks about, it reminds us that we're going back to a world where it's about quality, not quantity. It's been quantity for so long. It's been a numbers game. It's been a number of impressions for so long that I think that attention helps remind us what is important and what we're actually trying to achieve. And another just simple quote that from John Hudson, Digital Turbine, was, if you saw this story, does that mean you read it? That sums up attention completely. That is what it fundamentally is. It's not about, it's no longer about eyeballs. It's about engagement. And I think that it's such a huge topic. It's so interesting. There's so many different stats out there. And I think that it's, you know, I think it's covered really well with some really interesting points in industry review.
Like you said, John Hudson's quote from Digital Turbine was great. Targeting without attention will leave your brand on the sidelines in 2024, succinctly. So excellent. We'll see how that goes this year. Our next pillar is gaming. That was my pillar. I wrote something of an industry call to arms about the gaming industry. It's a bit of a passion of mine. I'm very, very interested in the opportunity around gaming. And I wrote a piece from ExchangeWire basically telling the industry, don't mess this up. This is a huge opportunity here. And you know, it's user experience is such an important part of advertising in the gaming sphere. Don't bother gamers while they're playing. Find innovative ways to get involved. The market's there. It's a hugely diverse area, huge wide-ranging demographics. Game on different platforms, whether it's in app, whether it's on PC, whether it's on console, it's such a wide market. But yeah, the industry needs to learn from previous from display, basically. Ciaran,
can you play devil's advocate, John, right? And it has to be said, how long can you keep talking about how great gaming is and why are brands looking? Is there a reason why brands are not jumping in? Maybe they feel it's not the right format for them. Maybe they feel it's more performance driven. Like, you know, I feel there's a reason for this, and maybe it's not been properly addressed, because you're right, it's a rich demographic. But does it take someone like Netflix to buy gaming, you know, titles and stream them on their platform and then serve ads against them? Like, would it take that type of like scale? I don't know. It's a mind-boggling thing, but like I'm just starting to think why the money is coming in after all the reports or all the analytics, all the usage numbers. Yeah, that would be my only sort of drawback on gaming, not trying to piss on your chips.
There's this notion that we talk about getting non-endemic brands into gaming. We're often trying to get you know what I mean by this, but brandy brands into gaming. Kieran, you mentioned performance there. If you look at the majority of gaming advertisers, they are gaming companies. And those gaming companies are pure performance. All they care about is lifetime value, average revenue per user, average revenue per paying user. It is all about numbers. It's all about getting the right combination of creative, targeting and everything else in between, and understanding what the user then goes on to do to ensure that they get revenue off the back of it. It's all revenue focused. Yeah. And we're trying to sell that kind of ad unit and that kind of advertising landscape to brands. Mm. Maybe they're manufacturers like P&G, for example, and get them to invest in gaming where they don't need that kind of data. They don't have that kind of same attitude towards targeting, towards engagement, towards understanding kind of what their consumers are doing. So maybe we are trying to fit a square peg into a round hole when it comes to that. And we should be looking at more non-endemic performance brands, because actually they would do bloody well out of it. But I don't think they're the ones we're going after.
Yeah, that's probably that they've gone too far up the funnel. It's interesting you say that, Lindsay, because Eric Stufert, you know, who runs mobile media memo, was that mobile memo?
Mobile dev memo.
Yeah. He had a drinks thing over here in Clerkenwell on Monday night. And I was sitting and I went along, Eric's great, and I went to see him. We had a good chat anyway. But I went into the room and I didn't know a single person in the room. It's just the difference. And I know that's just an anecdote, right? But it's always the difference between our world and that performance world. All sort of like mobile geeks, like performance geeks, like different universes completely. And I think you could be right, Lindsay. I think we're trying to graph. Like, maybe it doesn't work for brands, right? Maybe it's to the point it's about, you know, downloading the app or having a performance aspect to it. Hard to measure, hard to sort of quantify the brand impact. So,
maybe it's also just that, you know, despite the expansion of gaming audiences and the demographic as well, maybe it's still just not widespread enough and mainstream enough for brands to really take the risk to be, you know, spending money in that channel, in that environment. We, you know, have often likened the year of gaming and in-game advertising to the year of mobile. And it did take a long time for mobile advertising to change. And really, the thing that made it change was just the broad scale adoption of standardized smartphones across countries and demographies, where you had people even in, developing countries being able to access a smartphone and having a smartphone. And that is probably one of the, you know, pinpoints at which mobile advertising suddenly became more sophisticated. And I wonder if gaming just hasn't reached that moment yet. And that's not to say that there isn't a really wide audience or a growing audience, but maybe it's just not growing in the right directions yet. And then also as a consequence of that, maybe the technology that would enable the type of ad units that would appeal to the right types of advertisers, maybe they're not sophisticated enough either. Perhaps we do need to see something, and maybe those two things will happen at the same time. So maybe we need to see a bit more of an acceleration in terms of gaming technology. And like Kieran says, maybe it needs to be more available on mainstream platforms in a mainstream environment that really clues people into it. And maybe that creates advertising formats that advertisers find much easier to deal with. I don't know.
Yeah. I remember back in my days as a digital buyer many years ago, you know, there was, we were trying to convince the likes of Samsung to advertise on mobile back when mobile was not really a big thing, and only like 10% of the budget was on mobile. And they were performance. They wanted to sell a fridge or a washing machine, and they didn't want to just have people, and you had to try and convince them, you know, why would anybody buy a washing machine on a phone? And at the time you kind of go, well, that's a very good point. Nobody would buy a washing machine on a phone. Nowadays, people would buy a car on a phone, but they weren't doing that back then. You had to try and convince them that there was another reason. And you're not just using it as a last click. You're using it as a way of discoverability. People do their research on phones, then go and buy somewhere else. If the gaming world, and I'm talking maybe more about mobile gaming than anything else, if the gaming world is very, very performance focused, would a performance brand, non-endemic performance brand, want to advertise in the gaming environment? Because they're thinking, well, they're not going to leave the game to go and buy whatever it is I'm selling.
Yeah.
A branding brand is like, well, it's not the right environment for me because it's too performance-led. There's probably nowhere in between. So actually, maybe we're fighting a losing battle.
Yeah, but I should move on. But like, probably the narrative needs to change around mobile next year. That's probably what we need to do. Sorry, John.
Mobile or gaming?
Gaming. Sorry, not mobile. mobile gaming.
Well, I remain bullish on gaming. I understand, you know, there's some really good points in there, and I just see it as an area that really will develop. I think.
Dry your eyes, mate.
There is a massively, at the moment, underestimated social aspect to gaming as well. I think there's so much reach outside of the game that once your ad is in the game, you have communities around it. You have Twitch and YouTube audiences are through the roof. There is so much to offer. So yeah, it's you know, misconceptions around what in-game advertising can look like. But I remain bullish. And will do for the rest of the year. Oh God. It's an audio format, listeners, but Kieran's found some sunglasses. I'm going to move us on.
The future is bright, John.
With the tag on as well, hanging over his nose.
Exchange wearing glasses from Can. Anyway, let's move on, guys.
Speaking of a bright future, AI was always going to feature on our list. It's defining the early parts of this year. Lindsay, how did you feel about the AI pillar?
I was really interested by the main topic conversation around AI was certainly around creative. Like, creative was really the opportunity that, you know, everybody that we spoke to of Industry Review kind of came across with the same thing about the opportunities that exist and the lack of opportunity that maybe existed before in terms of access to assets and finding assets and being able to kind of really engage with dramatic creative. They all believe that AI will completely transform that. And you know, you had Andrei Kazakov from Atlovin talking about it from an in-app perspective. I was fascinated to hear kind of how important creative will be on that, being able to change an ad in real time based on so many different factors pulling it in together, and how that applies to just so many different things. And I think that in the ad tech industry, creative is the forgotten child. We've had, you know, we talk about this on Stage at ATS a lot. We try and kind of bring the world of creative and data together, and the two never really meet in the middle. I think the AI could actually bring them both together, and it's fascinating to really see the examples of where that can be used. And I'm going to take a quote from Ollie Marlowe Thomas from smartly.io, who said, you know, we find ourselves at the epicenter of a creative revolution marked by the rise of short-term videos, short-form videos, widespread integration of generative AI, the decline of third-party identifiers, and the dominance of social media as the hub for search and sharing. I think that really kind of encompasses where we're at. We're at an inflection point in terms of where people are spending their time and kind of where engagement's going. And that all means that creative is going to be a fundamental kind of middle ground for all of that. And that will make AI so interesting for the future of ad tech. Like, finally, creative will actually take much more of a center stage than it has done before.
Yeah. Rachel, what were your thoughts on the AI pillar?
Yeah, again, I think some really interesting insights. I feel a bit torn on AI because I feel as though, I think the value that it can bring to the industry and can bring to that creative process are very clear, and Lindsay's articulated that well. That also came up in a discussion at ATS Singapore late last year in September, October, and we had some really interesting examples of exactly how it's being used within creative agencies to improve advertising and marketing campaigns in a very intuitive, real-time way. Incredible. And we also had some examples, in fact, from a brand, a guy from HP, talking about how they've basically built, you know, a sort of a product around AI tools, being able to more intuitively predict how people are going to use products and what the product therefore should look like. All of that, I think, is great. And I think that's going to accelerate and only get more interesting this year. But then I'm also hearing a lot of people say things like AI has been overhyped, and I don't think it's actually going to have a massive impact on the advertising industry in 2024. I think, in fact, we might be talking about a bit of a retraction just in terms of use and application. I don't really believe that, but I think I understand the point that people are trying to get at, which is we've talked about how fantastic and fascinating use and application of AI can be in marketing and advertising, but now someone's actually got to do it. Someone's actually got to make that happen and make it work. And, you know, Lindsay, you and I talk about this all the time. In a business, there's such a vast difference between the ideas people and the doing people. So I feel like 2023 was all of us go, going AI ideas. This is how it should be used and applied in marketing and advertising. 2024, people have actually got to put that into action now. So let's see what we do actually achieve in 2024. It's still going to be fascinating either way.
Kieran, final quick thoughts on AI?
So from a macro piece, it's hilarious. All these AI generative search solutions will end up monetizing with ads. Just another point that ads are back. I agree with Rachel, I think that it's AI is more of an enabler than a destroyer of the ecosystem. I think it's a utility aspect. And the best companies I'm seeing right now are utility based companies that do have some kind of application. I think a lot of this stuff is going to be embedded in existing systems, existing companies. I'm seeing already like AI for curation, where you just basically use AI to build curated deals. I'm not necessarily sure how that's going to work, because the whole point of curation is having the human touch. So I think they're working tandem effectively, right? I don't think, maybe low level, copy editing piece. Yeah, for sure. But it just helps the teams do more copy editing, right? So it's sort of a multiplier in terms of efficiencies. The stories about Google laying off people because they're building AI to take away jobs from other people within Google. To be honest, Google has 186,000 people. I have no idea what most people do in Google. So maybe, that's just kind of a false flag in that sense. So yeah, it's a year to kind of knuckle down. The hype cycle has begun, and we'll see what happens next.
Right. We've reached our final pillar. Last but not least, sustainability was always going to be.
And it goes straight to the ESG queen herself, Rachel Smith.
Rachel Smith.
Great. Not sure I want to be queen of ESG, but anyway. So a fantastic quote, which underpins exactly what I think about environmental sustainability with respect to marketing and advertising, which is that this quote's from Brian Murphy from Duration Media. Year needs to be the year in which we transform from awareness to action. I couldn't agree more. I feel as though we've discussed at length environmental sustainability in the context of marketing and advertising for the last 2 years solidly. We have had various levels of discussion at various industry events and across a whole range of thought leaders to elevate everybody's awareness about the carbon footprint of digital advertising. I feel as though you would have to be hiding under a rock somewhere to have not got the message. We now need to move the conversation and the debate from awareness building and awareness raising to action. And that is how we are going to be judged at the end of 2024 when it comes to whether we've seen some progress around this issue in the industry. So how we do that, of course, I'm sure, I know everybody will have a variety of different views on this, but that's what I think we need to be focusing on in 2024. So I completely agree with Brian. The contributions in industry review were really interesting and very impassioned, which is what you often have when it comes to environmental sustainability. This is not just another thing that we need to be aware of or that we suddenly now need to take account of when we're crafting our marketing and advertising activities. It actually is having a real world impact on our lives and everybody's lives. And we need to do something to move from talk to action. So that's what I want to see this year. And I'm really glad that Brian clearly articulated that.
Yeah. Lindsay, your thoughts on sustainability finally?
Yeah, I think I agree with everything Rachel said and all the stuff that she pulled out. It's a very impassioned topic for people, and it's understandable because it is such an area of focus, and there's so much that we've talked about in the past, however long this has gone on for, feels like a long time, that will help sustainability, will help our efforts in that regard. They're all connected, and I think that there's a collective responsibility that is recognized and realized by everyone in the industry, and that will make this year look very interesting. You know, as we talked about other stuff, like last year was the year where everyone kind of really understood what needed to be done, and this year will be the year of action 100%. It's no more talk, it's all about action. I'm really looking forward to seeing what it looks like.
Yeah, and finally, Kieran, thoughts on sustainability?
I can't really say any more than what Rachel and Lindsay said. From a sort of technical commercial point of view, it just sort of bleeds again into curation. I think there'll be a lot of curated deals around sustainability. It becomes another really interesting signal, you know, particularly around what the likes of Scope 3 and Cedar and others are doing in that space, Impact Blue and all those. I think it's a dynamic area. I can see a lot of agencies and brands leaning into it because of obviously social responsibility and taking corporate responsibility for their carbon footprint. So, yeah, it's a big area. I don't see it sort of relenting anyway. I think it's there's momentum behind it. And to see that category just growing and growing and growing this year, just from pure like commercial capitalist point of view.
Yep, excellent. Well, that's it. That's our eight pillars. So thank you all very much for your time today. Really great to go through it all. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, John.
Excellent.
Thanks.
Download your copy, please, at exchangeware.com.
Yes, you will find a link to Industry Review 2024 in the show notes in this podcast or on exchangewire.com. Please download, digest and share. And thank you all very much for joining us today. We'll be back next week with the Mad Tech Podcast.